Welcome back, Hemingway listeners, to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. This episode is brought to you by the beverage Instant Coffee, Instant Decaf Coffee. Kind of just felt like a hot, sippy beverage, and that's what I've landed on. Isolation diary update as well. Eyes are getting better, finally. This has been annoying. I didn't sleep at all last night because my eyes were just so irritated. And then today my doctor, I went to my proper doctor. I was going to like just the one that was closest to my house, and I don't think that this lady there was doing the best job. She was trying, but anyway, you don't care about this. The point is, I went to my proper doctor and he was like, how long have your eyes been sore? And I told him, he's like, do you want some painkillers? And I was like, yes, I do. Anyway, he gave me painkillers and then I just slept all day today. Oh my God, it was so good. It felt so good to actually have proper, untormented sleep. So I feel a lot better and I feel a lot... I also feel a bit spaced out, I think, from the painkillers and the sleep. So I'm not going to say I feel refreshed because I just feel like I'm all doped up. Fun times, eh? Fun times. I never get sick. I was just saying that the other day. Like, I just never get sick. How good's that? And then I've just got, like, the grossest eyeball illness that you can get. So, I should have touched wood. Oh, that's what I did wrong. I didn't touch wood. God damn it. What are we talking about? Not me. We're talking about part one, chapter two of Madame Bovary. Charles, oh buddy, already you've been bamboozled so hard. Delicious. His wife, his old wife, did the old switcheroo. You know, his rich wife just goes, oh, by the way, I'm not actually rich. Oh, and I'm dead now. See ya. And left him with that. But he was also showing some interest in that other lady. I thought we were going to have a love triangle. And I was like, oh, God damn it, not another love triangle. Like, why is every book we read a love triangle? But then, no, his wife was dead by the end of the chapter. So love triangle averted. But then there was the daughter of the guy with the broken leg, was that what it was? Something like that. Anyway, you know what this book, the thing about this book is, I'm not building a clear picture in my head of like the premise of the book, I suppose, or like the starting point of the plot. I don't really know what's going on so far. Like the events that are unfolding are making sense, I suppose, but it's not piecing together for me as like a cohesive narrative. So I'm hoping that it does, that it starts to fall together. All right, Charlotte says, I didn't think it was super clear whether Charles's wife did intentionally mislead the Bovarys about her financial situation. It seemed equally plausible to me that she just got most of her money stolen and then the in-laws came down hard. One thing I wondered about was her share in the boat, which switched in value from 6,000 francs to 1,000 francs, according to this site. 600 francs was about 238 pounds at the time, and according to Wikipedia, a crown was 5 shillings or a quarter of a pound. Oh my God, my head's spinning. So amounts, those amounts are roughly equivalent. Okay, cool. As to the house being eaten up with mortgages, that's certainly unfortunate, but doesn't scream scammer to me. Either way, she was clearly hit hard by all the strife, and I felt bad for her. I also felt she was portrayed as a bit of a nag in this chapter, but her superstitions... Oh my God, I can't read tonight. But her suspicions about all this... but her suspicions about all the visits to Bertaux did seem accurate. Perhaps she was a justified nag. Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say she was a justified nag. And maybe I'm being too hard on her because I didn't think what you thought there about you know, she didn't mislead them about being wealthy, that her money was stolen. I just thought something shonky was going on. But at the same time, I don't really think I paid proper attention as I read yesterday's chapter. I think I was a bit out of it. Oh, Owltreat. Haven't seen you in the podcast, in the subreddit for a while. Owltreat, welcome back. Good to see you. Says, I may be reading and watching too many thrillers / mysteries lately because when I read the last line of the chapter, I was suspicious that Charles was somehow responsible for her death. He is a doctor, after all, with all access to all kinds of chemicals. It is kind of convenient that she dies immediately after the basis of their marriage, her fortune, is called into question. It was hardly a love match, and she almost certainly could not give him children, so... Ooh, the old mystery ellipses at the end there, trailing out into the darkness. really good theory. And, you know, I don't even know the genre of this book. Maybe it is a mystery. And if it is a mystery, I don't want to know because I reckon you've just cracked it. Because that's a good little twist there. That's pretty legit. Starfall 15, another name I haven't seen for a while. Welcome back, Starfall. Good to see you. Says, he doesn't strike me as an enterprising enough person to think of murder. So far, he hasn't made any active decision. Even the decision to stop going to Berteaux was out. Weariness Charles has left of going. Maybe I'm wrong and he'll surprise me. Her death was, after all, too sudden. Well, yeah, but that's what they want you to think, right? The unassuming person, the one who you'd know. It couldn't have been him. He can barely tie his own shoelace. But also saying that, it does sound like his whole life has been ushered out for him. His mother saying, do this, take that job, marry that person. And he's had no say in it. And you could imagine that being guided around and kind of pushed into all these things might build some resentment. And maybe you'd go ahead and do some wife murder. I don't know. Sounds like something that would happen in a classic novel. Now I'm going to be kind of disappointed if this book doesn't turn out to be a murder mystery. Charlotte said, when I read, oh God, and gave a sigh and fainted, she was dead. What a surprise. The last line almost sounded sarcastic to me, like of course it was a surprise, right? I will not hazard any prediction, though. I'm a terrible guesser. Dancing Goldfish says, yeah, that line was weird. Was it not a surprise? Dancing Goldfish. I don't think I've seen your username here. Are you a newbie? If so, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Hemingway list. that was a weird line, wasn't it? What a surprise. Was that the narrator saying to us, what a surprise? Or is it like the character reflecting like, oh my God, I'm dead? You know, it was a bit of a breaking the fourth wall almost kind of line. Simply Productive says, what an unpleasant woman. Geez, glad she wasn't my wife. I would have told her to pull the stick out of her rear. I'm not really invested in the book yet. Hopefully I will be soon. I feel that too. Yeah, I'm not at all invested in the book, I don't think. Or at least not invested in the characters. Mizo Piano 1234 says, I was confused as to what happened with the wife. Hopefully things will clear up in the next chapters. Hopefully. I'm hoping a lot clears up in the next few chapters because I'm not really following that well and I'm not really that invested. I've said that a lot of times before on this podcast, especially when we start a new book, the first couple of chapters. It's always for me a few pages in before I start to settle into what's actually going on in the book. Excuse me, I need to sip this beverage. Oh man, I'm out of it. I am out of it. I need to get in it. All right, I've got a whole chapter to read here. Let's do it. Chapter 3. Get yourself a warm beverage, a decaf coffee maybe, or a hot chocolate, and enjoy this. One morning, old Ruol brought Charles the money for setting his leg, 75 francs in 40 sous pieces, and a turkey. He had heard of his loss, and consoled him as well as he could. "I know what it is," said he, clapping him on the shoulder. "I've been through it. When I lost my dear departed, I went into the fields to be quite alone. I fell at the foot of a tree. I cried. I called on God. I talked nonsense to him. I wanted to be like the moles that I saw on the branches, their insides swarming with worms, dead and an end of it. And when I thought there were others at that very moment with their nice little wives holding them in their embrace, I struck great blows on the earth with my stick. I was pretty well mad with not eating. The very idea of going to a cafe disgusted me. You wouldn't believe it. Well, quite softly, one day following another, a spring on a winter, and an autumn after a summer, this wore away, piece by piece, crumb by crumb. It passed away. It is gone. I should say it has sunk. For something always remains at the bottom of one would, as one would say, a weight here at one's heart. But since it is the lot of all us, one must not give way altogether. One, and because others have died, want to die too. You must pull yourself together, Monsieur Bovary. It will pass away. Come to see us. My daughter thinks of you now and again, do you know? And she says you are forgetting her. Spring will be here soon. We'll have some rabbit shooting in the warrens to amuse you a bit." Charles followed his advice. He went back to the Berteau. He found all as he had left it, that is to say, as it was 5 months ago. The pear trees were already in blossom, and Farmer Rouault, on his legs again, came and went, making the farm more life, full of life. Thinking it his duty to heap the greatest attention upon the doctor because of his sad position, he begged him not to take his hat off, spoke to him in an undertone as if he had been ill, and even pretended to be angry because nothing rather lighter had been prepared for him than for the others, such as a little clotted cream or stewed pears. He told stories. Charles found himself laughing, but the remembrance of his wife suddenly coming back to him depressed him. Coffee was brought in. He thought no more about her. Has anyone here, by the way, a little aside, ever had real clotted cream? Oh my God. It's the best thing on the world. On the whole world. You pretty much have to go to a dairy farm to get it. You need to get it from, you know, right from the source. I think it's because it doesn't preserve well. It's only got like a day shelf life or something like that. I made that up, but for some reason you can only seem to get it on dairy farms. But if you ever get the chance to have clotted cream, order some scones, get some jam, and get that clotted cream. And oh, dear me. One of my favorite things. Anyway, that's a weird little aside for the middle of an audiobook. Let's get on with it. He thought less of her as he grew accustomed to living alone. The new delight of independence soon made his loneliness bearable. He could now change his meal times, go in or out without explanation, and when he was very tired, stretch himself at full length on his bed. So he nursed and coddled himself and accepted the consolations that were offered him. On the other hand, the death of his wife had not served him ill in his business, since for a month people had been saying, "The poor young man, what a loss." His name had been talked about, his practice had increased, and moreover, he could go to the Berteau just as he liked. He had an aimless hope, and was vaguely happy. He thought himself better looking as he brushed his whiskers before the looking glass. One day he got there about 3 o'clock, everyone was in the fields. He went into the kitchen, but did not at once catch sight of Emma. The outside shutters were closed. Through the chinks of the wood, the sun sent across the flooring long, fine rays that were broken at the corners of the furniture and trembled along the ceiling. Some flies on the table were crawling up the glasses that had been used and buzzing as they drowned themselves in the dregs of the cider. The daylight that came in by the chimney made velvet of the soot at the back of the fireplace and touched with blue the cold cinders, Between the window and the hearth, Emma was sewing. She wore no fichu. He could see small drops of perspiration on her bare shoulders. After the fashion of country folks, she asked him to have something to drink. He said no. She insisted, and at last, laughingly, offered to have a glass of liqueur with him. So she went to fetch a bottle of curacao from the cupboard, reached down two small glasses, filled one to the brim, poured scarcely anything into the other, and, after having clinked glasses, carried hers to her mouth. As it was almost empty, she bent back to drink, her head thrown back, her lips pouting, her neck on the strain. She laughed at getting none of it, while with the tip of her tongue passing between her small teeth, she licked, drop by drop, the bottom of her glass. She sat down again and took up her work. A white cotton stocking she was darning. She worked with her head bent down. She did not speak, nor did Charles. The air coming in under the door blew a little dust over the flags. He watched it drift along and heard nothing but the throbbing in his head and the faint clucking of a hen that had laid an egg in the yard. Emma from time to time cooled her cheeks with the palms of her hands and cooled these again on the knobs of the huge fire dogs. She complained of suffering since the beginning of the season from giddiness. She asked if sea salt would do her any good. She began talking of her convent, Charles, of his school. Words came to them. They went up into her bedroom. She showed him her old music books and the little prizes she had won and the oak leaf crowns left at the bottom of a cupboard. She spoke to him, too, of her mother, of the country, and even showed him the bed in the garden where, on the first Friday of every month, she gathered flowers to put on her mother's tomb. But the gardener they had never knew anything about it. Servants are so stupid. She would have dearly liked, if only for the winter, to live in town, although the length of the fine days made the country perhaps even more wearisome in the summer. And according to what she was saying, her voice was clear, sharp, or on a sudden, or all languor, drawn out in modulations that ended almost in murmurs as she spoke to herself, now joyous, opening big naive eyes, then with her eyelids half closed, her look full of boredom, her thoughts wandering. Going home at night, Charles went over her words one by one, trying to recall them, to fill out their sense, that he might piece out the life she had lived before he knew her. But he never saw her in his thoughts other than he had seen her the first time, or as he had just left her. Then he asked himself what would become of her if she would be married, and to whom. Alas, old Ruault was rich, and she so beautiful, but Emma's face always rose before his eyes, and a monotone, like the humming of a top, sounded in his ears. If you should marry, after all, if you should marry. At night he could not sleep, his throat was parched, he was athirst. He got up to drink from the water bottle and opened the window. The night was covered with stars, a warm wind blowing in the distance, the dogs were barking. He turned his head towards the berceau. Thinking that, after all, he should lose nothing, Charles promised himself to ask her in marriage as soon as occasion offered, but each time such occasion did offer, the fear of not finding the right words sealed his lips. Old Ruault would not have been sorry to be rid of his daughter, who was of no use to him in the house. In his heart he excused her, thinking her too clever for farming, a calling under the ban of heaven, since one never saw a millionaire in it. Far from having made a fortune by it, the good man was losing every year, for if he was good in bargaining, in which he enjoyed the dodges of the trade, on the other hand, agriculture, properly so called, and the internal management of the farm suited him less than most people. He did not willingly take his hands out of his pockets, and did not spare expenses in all that concerned himself, liking to eat well, to have good fires, and to sleep well. He liked old cider, underdone legs of mutton, glorious, which is a mixture of coffee and spirits, well beaten up. He took his meals in the kitchen alone, opposite the fire, on a little table brought to him, already laid out as on the stage. When, therefore, he perceived that Charles's cheeks grew red if near his daughter, which meant that he would propose for her one of these days, he chewed the cud of the matter beforehand. He certainly thought him a little meagre, and not quite the son-in-law he would have liked, but he was said to be well brought up, economical, very learned, and no doubt would not make too many difficulties about the dowry. Now, as old Rouault would soon be forced to sell 22 acres of his property, as he owed a good deal to the mason, to the harness maker, and as the shaft of the cider press wanted renewing, if he asks her, he said to himself, I'll give her to him. At Michaelmas, Charles went to spend 3 days at the Berteau. The last had passed, like the others, in procrastinating from hour to hour. Old Rouault was seeing him off. They were walking along the road full of ruts. They were about to part. This was the time. Charles gave himself as far as to the corner of the hedge, and at last went past it. Monsieur Rouault, he murmured, I should like to say something to you. They stopped. Charles was silent. Well, tell me your story. Don't I know all about it? Said old Rouault, laughing softly. Monsieur Rouault, stammered Charles. I ask nothing better, the farmer went on. Although no doubt the little one is of my mind, still we must ask her opinion. So, you get off, I'll go back home. If it is yes, you needn't return because of all the people about, and besides it would upset her too much, but, so that you mayn't be eating your heart, I'll open wider the outer shutter of the window against the wall. You can see it from the back by leaning over the hedge. And he went off. Charles fastened his horse to a tree. He ran into the road and waited. Half an hour passed. Then he counted 19 minutes by his watch. Suddenly a noise was heard against the wall. The shutter had been thrown back. The hook was still swinging. The next day by 9 o'clock he was at the farm. Emma blushed when he entered, and she gave a little forced laugh to keep herself in countenance. Old Rouault embraced his future son-in-law. The discussion of money matters was put off. Moreover, there was plenty of time before them, as the marriage could not decently take place till Charles was out of mourning, that is to say, about the spring of the next year. The winter passed. Waiting for this, Mademoiselle Rouault was busy with her trousseau. Part of it was ordered at Rouen, and she made herself chemise and nightcaps after fashioned plates that she borrowed. When Charles visited the farmer, the preparations for the wedding were talked over. They wondered in what room they should have dinner. They dreamed of the number of dishes that would be wanted, and what should be entrees. Emma would, on the contrary, have preferred to have a midnight wedding with torches, but old Rouault could not understand such an idea. So there was a wedding at which 43 persons were present, at which they remained 16 hours at table, began again the next day, and, to some extent, on the days following. Alrighty, there we go, another chapter down, that's chapter 3. Nicely done, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. I will see you tomorrow.